From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. A toxin in fish found in Gulf waters causes some of the strangest symptoms. People affected by it report numbing of their lips and tongues and fingertips and other bizarre symptoms. In rare cases, it can even be fatal. It's called ciguatoxin, and it's carried by reef fish that could be making their way to your dinner plate. We'll talk with a scientist who's tracking the toxin to find out where it comes from and how to avoid it. Plus, the Autism Society says the number of children diagnosed with autism continues to grow, and our public schools are trying to meet those needs through exceptional student education. Cypress Lakes High School just opened a soothing room to help autistic students deal with sensory overload, but autism advocates say more schools need such rooms to support ESE students. We'll talk with autism advocates and ESE educators to look at what services exist and where the money comes from to make it all happen. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. It's called Exceptional Student Education, or ESE, and it's providing children diagnosed with autism and other disorders the tools they need in the classroom. Later on Gulf Coast Live, a discussion with ESE officials in Lee County Schools and autism advocates about a new soothing room in our region and what other needs our ESE students have. But first, it's the marine toxin most likely to get you sick, and it can be found in the reef fish that are popular on menus and dinner plates all along the Gulf Coast. It's called ciguatoxin, and if you eat fish tainted with it, you could experience some bizarre and frightening symptoms. In rare cases, it can even be fatal. Here to tell us more about the toxin and his research into how it spreads into fish and throughout the environment is Dr. Mike Parsons, an FGCU researcher and biologist. Also joining our discussion today is researcher and grad student Adam Katosos. Welcome. We're talking about strange and potentially deadly ciguatoxin found in reef fish across the globe, including Southwest Florida. Call in with your questions or concerns at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or catch us on Facebook at WGCU or on Twitter at WGCU Public Media. And the hashtag is GCL. So this is a toxin I've never heard of. I can't believe that it exists. Can you tell me a little bit, Dr. Parsons, about what it is, where it comes from, and how it gets into the fish we eat?
So ciguatoxin is a compound that's produced by single-celled algae. And these algae tend to grow on seaweeds in tropical environments like coral reefs, for example. Herbivores will eat the algae, and they'll consume these microalgae and the toxins, and that can make the herbivores toxic. The carnivorous fish will eat the smaller herbivorous fish, and they'll then accumulate more of the toxin. And since people usually catch and eat the carnivores, things like snapper, grouper, barracuda, that's where we're most likely to be exposed to the toxin. And we're very, very sensitive to the toxin, so it can make us sick with a lot of different neurological symptoms.
So you don't have to have a lot of it to get sick.
No, that's correct.
So you were saying it as far as parts per billion or million or?
Yeah, sub parts per billion. So the Food and Drug Administration, for example, sets guidelines for the Caribbean at 0.1 part per billion. So that basically means one molecule of ciguatoxin for every 10 billion molecules of other things that would be in the fish tissue. So that's very, very low amounts.
Yeah, and for reference, DDT, which is a now banned pesticide, that's unsafe at 5 parts per million. And you're talking about up into the billions as far
as... Yeah, so it's about 50,000 times lower than what the DDT guidelines would be.
Wow. So you just need a little tiny, teeny bit and you get sick.
Yes, yes.
So ciguatoxin is the name of the toxin, but then ciguatera is something completely different. Can you tell me a little bit about that maybe, Adam?
So the ciguatera fish poisoning is a actual disease that some people can get while eating certain fish species, such as what Dr. Parsons said, hogfish, snapper, barracuda, grouper. So some of the symptoms that most people would assume in the beginning would be gastrointestinal and neurological. So you'd start with the normal gastrointestinal with normal...
Like throwing up.
Yeah, throwing up.
And then all the whole digestive tract being in an uproar.
Yeah.
As we all, anybody who's ever experienced a bad piece of fish.
Correct.
Right?
So over time, you'll have those symptoms. And then after a few hours, you might have neurological symptoms, which will switch your cold and hot sensations. You'll get tingling in your extremities. A lot of people have talked about certain – like your teeth are really sensitive and they kind of feel numb. Really strange symptoms that you might get from the actual neurotoxin if it's in a high enough concentration.
And that is because it's acting on your brain's perception of these feelings?
Yeah. So the actual toxin will attach to your neurons along a channel that's connecting all your neurons in your brain. So that's what is the main pathway of it affecting you neurologically.
So after you go through the normal feeling sick from a bad piece of fish, and then these things start showing up, and do they last a long time or they go away just like after you've finished, you know, digesting whatever it was that you ate that was bad? Usually that path is gone. Does this stick around or does it go away?
So again, it depends on the concentration of how much you eat in that certain fish. So it can depend and vary on the fish that you eat. So a lot of people have reported that it may last like hard – like the intense symptoms might last weeks to months or as short as like hours to days. However, with certain food that you eat, it might flare up those symptoms again. So we don't really understand how that happens. So some people might eat a bad fish and then 1 or 2 years later they might drink or might eat some random fish that doesn't have high concentrations of toxin, but it'll flare right back up and you'll get those symptoms all over again.
Wow. So it can stick around for up to years. Wow. So, I mean, what are some of the stories of people that you've had that have talked to you about what they're going through? I mean, are they diagnosed readily? I mean, do doctors know? Are they able to figure out what the person could be suffering from based on these symptoms? Is it widely known in the medical community?
Overall, it's overall, it's not widely known. Probably South Florida, especially around the Miami-Dade region. The doctors are more aware of it, but only about 10% of cases are actually reported. Part of that might be that the doctors don't know the diagnosis. A lot of it is probably due to the people just being too sick to go to the hospital or the emergency room, or in some cases where they might be familiar with Ciguatera, they know there's no treatment for it. So why would you want to crawl out of bed or get too far away from, you know, your bathroom or something like that if you know they're not really going to be able to help you at the hospital? That being said, even though there's no cure for it, you can treat some of the symptoms. So, for example, one of the symptoms of a more severe case of Ciguatera fish poisoning would be a drop in blood pressure, a drop in your heart rate. And so in some cases, you'll have to go into intensive care for that. So you would need to go to the hospital in that case.
So if you eat a lot of this particular toxin, you're saying that you could have problems with your blood pressure and your heart rate.
Yeah.
How is that part of it? I mean, switching hot and cold in your mouth and neurological symptoms, is it your brain telling these vessels to dilate or telling your heart to act differently? Is that
– basically – ciguatoxin, which is the toxin that causes Ciguatera fish poisoning, it reacts to the sodium channels in our neurons. And so they're throughout our body, but there's higher concentrations of them in our peripheral ends of the nervous system. So that's why your fingertips will start tingling, your tongue will go numb, your lips. But you also have a lot of these neurons then associated with your heart. And so where you have a higher concentration of these neurons, they're not going to be firing as efficiently or in a synchronous manner. So as soon as your nervous system basically starts to get scrambled up a little bit, you'll see the effects of that where you have the highest concentration of those sodium channels then.
I'm just nervous now to eat fish. Do I need to be scared?
I don't think people need to be scared. I think they just need to be educated. So for example, it's basically a risk analysis. So if you really want fresh fish, if you really want fresh fish from a tropical and or reef environment, should you eat barracuda? Probably not, because it's a higher risk. But I do know a lot of people who will eat barracuda. A lot of people will eat smaller barracuda under the assumption that they're safe. I don't eat barracuda, but I've heard it's a very tasty fish, and I do know of people that eat barracuda. So you probably have a higher risk of contracting ciguatera fish poisoning if you eat something like barracuda versus very low to zero risk if you eat mahi-mahi or if you eat a wahoo or something like that, because they're not associated with the reef food web, and so they're not going to be exposed to the toxin. So it just kind of depends on, I guess, how much of a risk you want to take. Ciguatera tends to flare up, we think, in certain regions. So the Bahamas went through a period where black grouper were causing more cases of ciguatera. So maybe more toxin was moving into the food web and affecting these black grouper. We're not exactly sure which areas in the Bahamas, but it might be a good idea to avoid grouper from the Bahamas in that case. The FDA, Food and Drug Administration, did put out an advisory warning against eating fish from the flower garden banks. Basically a reef system that's off of the Louisiana-Texas border, because black grouper were getting people sick there as well. So some areas we call it getting hot. So you might get hot for a little while, and so you just have to be careful about eating some of these predators, the grouper, the snappers, barracuda, from those areas when ciguatera is flaring up. And we're not sure why these flare-ups occur yet, so that's something we're studying.
Well, I'm glad you are studying it so that we can learn more about it, since I hadn't heard about it until recently, obviously. Call in with your thoughts about fish and ciguatera, the toxin that we're learning about today, if you'd like to get involved in the conversation, at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or you can comment online on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU, using the hashtag GCL. You were talking about the fish and where they come from. So how do you know where they come from? I mean, if you go to a store, they usually don't label them as such. So any advice for people seeking fish that's not?
I think always ask.
Yeah.
You know, so at restaurants, they should have an idea, if especially if they're buying it directly from a fishmonger that they know and work with. For the stores, they may be working with a distributor, so it might get a little fuzzier on the chain of access and ownership of that fish as it moves through the different distributors. But if people can find, basically just asking and learning more about it, and maybe working with or buying fish from places where they have the good records. I know one of my former graduate students looked at how restaurants purchase their fish and what distributors or mongers they used. And on one hand, some of them were really good and were very proactive on it. On the other hand, some of them were part of a bigger entity, and so it was harder to keep track of the fish. So it's not an easy question, but I would always ask to see if you can get an answer.
Yeah, it'd be good to get those answers. Another thing that's important to point out, you can't cook it out, right?
No, the toxin is heat stable.
So you could cook it till it's just almost impossible to eat, and it's still there?
Yeah.
Because you always operate on the assumption that if you just really cook it, you're going to get rid of all the bad stuff.
Yeah, like with bacteria infections, you could just cook them out and they'll just die out. So it wouldn't be a problem. But with ciguatoxin, you cannot.
So if it's – and is there a way to test raw fish to see if it has it?
Not easily. Not readily accessible for like normal consumers or for distributors.
Okay. Well, we've heard a couple of folk remedies, and some people say that if you put it on the ground – which I'm probably not going to do with my raw fish anyway. But some people say that if you could put it on the ground, and if ants or other flies are willing to land on it and be near it, then it's probably okay to eat. And some people say if the bugs won't go near it, then it's probably got this toxin. Have you heard this one?
I have heard that.
Is it true?
I have never tested it. So
yeah, I think that's that's the issue, is it's never been tested against the known toxin testing methods. So yeah, we don't know if it works or not. So, for example, maybe most people, maybe everybody did not get sick eating a fish where, you know, the flies landed on it or the ants crawled on it. But what about the fish that the flies wouldn't land on? If they ate that, would they definitely get sick or not? And I don't know if people would want to.
Yeah, these are scientific analysis of people, you know, with that are just kind of grilling in their backyard.
Yeah.
I mean, people have home remedies and home ideas, and they just kind of follow these. So I just wanted to see if it had ever been tested.
Yeah, I've heard cases where people would feed it to their cat.
Oh, that's nice.
Feed it to their dog and see if they get sick.
Well, I mean, how do you then evaluate the cat? Cat, is your lip feeling numb right now? Meow. I mean, I don't know how you would know.
Right.
Well, I guess if they have the gastrointestinal problem, then right, then that.
Or some families will feed it to the older adults in the family first.
Before giving it to the...
To the young kids and things like that.
Oh, that just seems so risky though.
Yeah.
Because you don't know different sensitivities of different age groups and people
their
immune systems. I mean, some people have a stomach of steel and some people just don't.
But if you think about some islands and communities that are so reliant on fish and, you know, let's say the South Pacific, let's say St. Thomas or some of the Caribbean islands, if that's their main source of animal protein, they're going to eat it. And so they have to use whatever methods they feel comfortable with to ensure that the fish is safe to eat or, you know, take whatever measures they can to try to safeguard as many of their family members as they can. But, you know, sometimes there are reports of people getting sick multiple times because they really have no choice but to continue eating fish. So, right.
Well, we do have somebody on the phone. Elaine is calling from Fort Myers, and she's saying that her daughter got this. Tell us your story.
Yes. Actually, she lived in New York at the time and ate at one of the very fine restaurants up there, ordered grouper. And she only ate half of it, took the other half home with her, and later that night she was throwing up diarrhea. And, well, long story short, she wound up in the hospital, spent 10 days there, exhibited all of the symptoms and repercussions of eating this deadly fish. And she cannot eat fish and drink coffee and has to watch everything she eats because it would cause a flare-up.
Oh, so you're saying coffee would cause a flare-up?
It's been devastating for her. Tried to sue. It was finally came to the court, and the judge just dismissed the case. And nobody, you know, even though they were warned not to fish in those certain waters, that fish wound up in a restaurant in New York City. So I don't eat grouper or hardly any fish. That maybe river fish is what I prefer to eat.
Wow, well, that's a
terrible thing.
That's an amazing story. And in New York City. So interestingly, like we were talking about channels of distribution and not knowing where things come from, and then maybe some of the onus would be on the distributors to make sure that they're not getting fish from what you're calling hotspots.
Yeah, and that's a very unfortunate story. And, you know, hearing some of these triggers, coffee,
yeah,
in this case, and, you know, having to control your diet to try to keep the symptoms from reoccurring. I mean, it's life-changing, honestly. And if you're in a New York restaurant, you wouldn't expect to be exposed or have to deal with a risk like that. But with an increasingly international and expanding fish trade and a lot of restaurants wanting to get more exotic fishes, things like that happen. There was another story that I got a phone call from someone at the Florida Department of Health, and they said, what do you know about barracuda? And I said, well, you know, it's toxic, da-da-da-da-da. And they said, well, you're about to get a call from a Manhattan lawyer whose clients ordered barracuda in a Manhattan restaurant and got ciguatera. And I said, what are they doing serving barracuda in a Manhattan restaurant? I know. And I said, I thought you can't sell barracuda.
Yeah, I didn't think that that was commercially, you know, available.
It's not supposed to be. So I have no idea how the distributor, you know, and then sold it and why the Manhattan restaurant bought it.
And then
but the lawyer called me and, you know, wanting to sue. And they said, what are your thoughts on this? And I said, well, there's an increased risk, but there is no way to screen and test the fish for them to know if it's going to be toxic or not. And so you can almost, I don't want to say hide, but you can almost use that as an excuse. Ignorance, you know, is innocence in that case almost. So, and it's difficult. And that's one thing that a lot of researchers with ciguatoxin and ciguatera fish poisoning are working on is trying to understand the dynamics of the toxin throughout the food web, because it'll change a little bit. And so it become – you have to use different techniques to detect it in a barracuda versus, say, a parrotfish, and trying to make cheap, reliable tools that, you know, anybody could use to test their fish to see if they contain toxin or not. And so that's where a lot of the toxin side of the research is going these days.
And this toxin, we can't blame anybody for it. It's naturally occurring?
It's naturally occurring.
It's just there. It's produced by the algae that – is on the plants that the smaller fish eat.
Yep.
And that's it. There's nobody – we can't be mad at the pesticide companies or anything for any of this. It's nope. Just – that's just there, and it just happens.
Yes.
Do you get a lot of calls from people that want to find out more about it as far as for legal cases?
I've gotten calls from two other lawyers. One was a lawyer in Miami with a very similar story as the Manhattan story that the caller, Elaine, mentioned in the story I just told. I also got a call from an advocate who was worried that people were selling barracuda in some of the neighborhoods in Miami and selling it for a dollar a pound. And the people that were buying it, you know, wanted to get the most protein basically for the money, the limited resources they had. And this advocate was concerned that they were exposing themselves to the risk of ciguatera without knowing it. And as Elaine mentioned in her call, her daughter was in the hospital for 10 days. So if there's somebody who's on a tight budget and wants to buy fish, and if it's barracuda and they get sick, you know, the health expenses related to that and, you know, the loss of time and work would be very, you know, dramatic for the family.
Yeah, financial ruin.
Yeah.
So as far as the fish, barracuda seems to be getting the brunt of the attention of what we're talking about. Even though it's not commercially available, private fishers will go out, get barracuda, and then eat it themselves. But people that don't fish and are looking at commercially available fish, it sounds like snapper and grouper can be susceptible depending on where they come from as far as being a hot spot. But then how about hogfish? You were mentioning a little bit about hogfish being it has greater concentrations of this toxin.
So it depends with hogfish. It just depends, like with any other species. It depends where it's coming from. So and there's also different species such as horse-eyed jack and other jacks that are found in the Caribbean that have been found to be toxin as well, or toxic.
Mm-hmm.
So it also goes back to diet as well. So hogfish are usually eating more crustaceans and like crabs, lobster, small snails and stuff like that as compared to just herbivory. So I guess I can make some people not worry about it as much. But at the same time, people have gotten sick from eating hogfish.
Are there any others that you know of?
Those are mainly the main species that have gotten people sick in the Caribbean region.
Okay. And how about lionfish?
Bigger lionfish have detectable levels of toxin, but there have been no known cases, that at least that I know of people getting ciguatera from lionfish.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told you may just want to worry or look out for some of the bigger ones. And by bigger ones, you know, huge for around here, they'd be, you know, 15, 18 inches long. And so I don't think in Southwest Florida we'd see that. But in some places you might, you know, you might pull up some big ones, maybe deeper waters of the Bahamas, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Amberjack have been causing some ciguatera cases over the past couple of years. And at least six cases that I've heard about, people calling me about, were amberjack that were purchased from Key Largo. So they were probably caught in the Keys, but amberjack and barracuda as well, they move around quite a bit. So we're not exactly sure where they would have accumulated the toxin.
Well, not only that, they move around in the ocean a lot, and then they're moved around, as we just heard, by distributors far and wide. So no matter where you're at, coming into contact with some of these fish, it's just it's tough that there's no way to know ahead of time if it has it.
Right.
And no matter how you cook it, it's going to be there.
Right.
Yeah, it just doesn't go away.
Yeah.
And then it affects people differently too, just as it shows up in the fish differently.
Correct.
Wow. I've heard one case with amberjack. A woman emailed me ate amberjack in a restaurant up in St. Pete, and she and her sister, and they just both had severe itching outbreaks, and it just drove them absolutely crazy, and the doctor couldn't do anything about it. And you know, it's like, well, you can try like antihistamines or something like that to try to calm down, maybe steroids, you know, and
nothing.
But you just have to, yeah, and maybe see if, again, if diet's causing an issue there or not. Other people mentioned, Adam was mentioning about teeth feeling numb, but some people, their teeth feel really loose and it feels like they're falling out of your mouth.
But that's in your brain, really. They're not actually
loose. Yeah,
they're
not really loose,
no. And then, you know, you drink hot tea and it tastes like iced tea or, you know.
Yeah,
you
so. Right.
That is just – those are the strangest symptoms. I haven't had any of those, but then I'm like, oh, itching? Sometimes I'm a little itchy. Maybe I am.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
How paranoid do we need to be about it too? So all right. Well, I really appreciate you coming and telling us all about this.
Sure. Yeah,
so I guess absolutely. The bottom line is to keep an eye on where your fish is coming from.
Correct.
And seeing if they're hot spots. I guess you can get on the FDA's website and find out what
right.
their alerts are.
Yep.
If you are really into eating the fish, and I love fish, so wow, that's just so informative. I really appreciate you coming in. Well, that's all the time we have for this segment. I'd like to thank you both for coming in and talking with us, Dr. Mike
sure.
Parson and grad student Adam Katassis. Thank you both for being here to tell us about this bizarre toxin and all of its strange symptoms. Coming up next, the number of children diagnosed with autism continues to grow, and public schools are striving to meet the needs of these special students. We'll learn more about soothing rooms at Cypress Lakes High School, talk with autism advocates about what more is needed, and school officials about what else is in the works. That's coming up on Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Stay with us.